Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
Anymore, Don, a lot of people don't know this about me, but kids can really get on my nerves.
What?
Kids can really get on my nerves.
Okay, so Tim, let's just back up a little bit because we already know that you're a no pet person, or at least no cats, right?
No cats,
which is
no
fair
dogs.
Enough. I'm with you, but okay, so
no dogs.
Now, so you're alienating a big. I had this fairly long discussion the other day with a group of people, all of whom had dogs. Okay, we were around this big table.
Did I offend them by something I said?
No, and I'm not going to name any names, but you've heard them on the radio. Let's just put it this way.
Okay.
And they all had dogs, and they were all like so ecstatic about all the dogs that they had. And I had to throw in my little story about, yeah, I said no to a dog, and then we even had a dog for a weekend, and my kids are like, no more dogs. And they looked at me like I was crazy. So I'm with you on this one. I understand. But kids, Timory, you're taking it to a new level.
Here's the thing, though. So many children are incredibly disrespectful. And, you know, it's a good thing that I only really babysat once and paid my sister $5 to come along and change the diapers and take the kids to the bathroom. But here's the thing. So many kids don't listen. And I think that there's such a strong disrespect in a lot of children anymore. And it's a mentality we have in the way we interact with them and how we're always explaining ourselves. And it was interesting because this Prager University video came up recently, and it talks about helping your children obey, essentially, with authority.
So, okay, so let's clarify again. So it's not necessarily that you have problems with kids. You have an issue with kids who are blatantly disrespectful and disobedient, running crazy all over the whatever you're in. Yeah, I get it. Okay.
That's the thing.
Now, I too, you know, more so before I had kids, admittedly, right? Because here's what happens to me when you become a parent, at least for me, you become a lot less judgmental about other parents, right?
Yes.
Because all kids are different. And, you know, in the past, you might have looked and said, listen, get control of your kid. And then now you're like, oh my gosh, I can't, you know, it's like the kids are running crazy. It's tough. Okay. Parenting is difficult. Having said that, though, I do agree that there are principles to get your kid to be a little bit more under control that you can use. And again, it's not an easy thing. So I want to preface our discussion with all of that. Like, we get it.
Absolutely.
And it's hard.
We talk about this on air, how things like the zero tolerance policy and the way we expect little boys to behave, it's completely unrealistic. It's one thing for a child to be rambunctious and active. It's another thing to be completely disrespectful.
Absolutely. And this is what this video, this PragerU video, and we've used these in the past.
Yes.
I think it's probably PragerU.com. You can go and there's, I don't know, hundreds of videos. A lot of insightful little like 5-minute videos.
Incredible.
Great, great resource.
And their Instagram page, the videos are usually 30 seconds long and they take a clip of the longer one. So if you want to go deeper, you just pull it up on YouTube.
Okay. So this guy has some tips for us as parents. How would you summarize if you could distill his teaching?
You know, there are a couple different elements, but the first is he talks about how a lot of parents are struggling with their kids in the sense because with their discipline, they explain themselves all the time. And he takes the example of a teacher, let's say in a school district, one of the teachers who's, say, the best disciplinarian. And the reality is he said, if you were to monitor her, it's not necessarily that she's disciplining all the time, but she speaks with authority. She speaks things that she could say in, say, 50 words. She makes very simple declarative sentences in about 10 words. And it makes her sound more confident, clear, simple language. But also, this is a big thing that stuck out to me. Say she wants you to read your science book. She would say, you are going to take out your science book and turn to page 30. Well, often what happens is a teacher says, I want you to take out your science book and you'll go to page 30 because we're going to study X, Y, and Z. Well, when you give them the reason because, it suddenly gives them room for argument. And so the teachers who are better disciplinarians were spoken declarative sentences and were confident in saying, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, we're talking about a PragerU video called How to Get Kids to Listen. It's by family psychologist John Rosemond. And he does focus on the issue of authority. And I think that was sort of the key thing. Like, the parents that can't get their kids to listen, oftentimes, whether it's parents or teachers, actually, any sort of situation where you've got some kids and they just will not obey, mm-hmm. the difference seemed to be that the kids didn't obey when the adult treated the kid as an equal,
yes.
as someone who has to be explained to. So you get down onto their level and we're going to have this long discussion about why you need to do this. And that simply doesn't work, according to psychologist John Rosemond. Now, I agree. I don't think that does work.
He actually gives a funny example in a sense. He said, do not get down on their level. And
like
they,
physically, like
yes.
actually get down eye to eye.
Yes, and they have kind of little graphics that they're creating, and they have the little cartoon of a boy sitting there, and they suddenly put a crown on him and the parent, and it says, it actually looks like you're bowing down to a king when you do this. You're on your knees, you're just before them, listening to what they have to say.
His basic argument, I would suggest, is that kids actually crave an authority figure
yes.
in their life. It's actually comforting. He doesn't say this, but I'm extrapolating now. Kids actually crave an authority figure in their life because it's comforting to them to know that they don't have to have everything in control, right? Like
yes.
you don't have to understand everything. You don't have to know how the world works, because then it's on you to try to figure out how to navigate that. That's too much pressure to put on a kid.
Yes.
What kids need to hear is, just go do this. Just do that. Why? Because I said so. I'm the authority figure here. That's, I think, would summarize it. And it makes a lot of sense to me.
And it helps them to learn in that how to trust, how to be comfortable, how to learn to speak truth with clarity and be confident in it. And of course, you know, we have to look at the parents and the parents making sure that what they're asking to do is reasonable. But again, that's separate. We're talking to an audience who hopefully are well-formed, and they're asking things that are reasonable of their children.
Well, and this is another clarification
yes.
I would make. This is good for young kids. All right.
Mm-hmm.
As kids get older, they do need to know why you have the rules that you do.
Exactly.
Okay. As young kids, they don't necessarily need to know the rules. Although I have a son who I think is just the most inquisitive kid. the why questions have been nonstop since he could form syllables. All right. Just why, Dad? Why? Why? All right. Let me try to explain it to you. But I mean, sort of a unique case. The general principle that young kids mostly need an authority. They just need to know that somebody else has this under control, and if I can follow them, everything's going to be all right. I'm not saying we don't have strong-willed kids. I've got strong-willed kids myself, all right? But later in life, though, I would say, if you just have rules and you as a parent don't know why you have the rules, kids can see through that, and that causes trouble. So if you've got the teenage girl and she doesn't know why you're not going to let her go out at night and you can't explain it, that, I think, we could probably work on as parents a little more.
Well, and the kids see through, especially millennials, they are a demographic that has been so incredibly marketed to. They see an advertisement on absolutely everything that they, in general, when you study this demographic, they see authenticity. They see through things. They see when people are being inconsistent. And so that helps when you're looking at parents, even if the reason's not explained, say when they're younger, but there's this consistency the child's learning from the parent.
Yeah, I would apply this to church as well, frankly.
Absolutely.
So you can teach the young kids just basic doctrine and obedience and all of that. But as they get older, you better have some why answers, right? You better be able to explain to some degree why the church has the teaching on sexual ethics that it does, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is very important, because if it's just no for no good reason, they're going to abandon it. They're going
yes.
to say, well, if you don't have a reason, if I'm just obeying for the sake of obeying,
mm-hmm.
that's not good enough. Not this
it's
is not
a both and.
Yeah, it's
and
not to deny
yes.
that at the beginning when they're young, it's okay to just be the authority. It's okay to say, you're going to do this because I said. I don't need to explain everything. And I think it's sort of like our walk with God, ultimately. It's, at many levels, mm-hmm. it's just, you know what? God said, do it, and I'm going to do it. And we don't know all the ins and outs and whys. I mean, God's God, we're not. But that's not to say that God doesn't have reasons or that he won't explain them.
Absolutely. Well, and I think of it too. Often Jesus, we read it in the Gospels, in Matthew 18:3, for example, and Jesus is talking about how essentially you have to become like little children. You will never enter the kingdom if you don't. And when we think about little children often follow, in a sense, with a deep sense of faith, especially in the culture at that time. They would trust the parents. They would obey. They would follow what they were told to do. This is what we're called to, this obedience of who we are and how we interact. At the same time, Jesus would speak in parables, things that weren't always clear, but then he'd go to his apostles and explain them clearly so that the apostles could go out and teach and preach and be clear and give the reasons why.
Well, and part of that is we can't understand all the time. Like, the apostles couldn't grasp all that Jesus was. And so it's a step-by-step thing. A couple of quick other caveats. Kids are only going to trust you as much as you are trustworthy. So abusive parents,
yes.
Parents that are angry all the time, that, I mean, if you're not someone that deserves to have their faith in you, well, they're not going to give it to you. So that would be another thing. You can't just be an authoritarian parent laying down the rules if it's not out of love,
yes.
I would suggest.
I always think about that as well, Don, is you can't teach temperance sometimes to your children if you don't have it. And you're asking your children to be very controlled, have self-control and temperance if you're asking them to learn obedience.
That's right.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Oh, Canada. What is happening up in my home and native land? You thought I was going to sing the national anthem? No,
you
I
was not. You sounded like you were about to, Don.
I was not going to sing the national anthem. Here's the headline. In Canada, Big Brother is ready to raid your home and steal your child. Now, as you may know, I still have plenty of family up in Canada. It's where I grew up. And so that kind of headline caught my eye. I'm like, what is going on?
You're heading up there this summer to visit family.
Just a few weeks, absolutely. Well, it turns out that the headline's not actually just clickbait, that there are some serious issues. And there have been in Canada for a while, frankly. In 2012, for example, it was announced that homeschooling families can't teach homosexual acts sinful in a classroom setting. So if you're a homeschooler, and this was specifically in the province of Alberta, you cannot teach that homosexual acts are sinful because you are indoctrinating bigotry or some such thing, right?
Yes.
It reminds me of the whole Bernie Sanders thing from a couple of weeks ago where he was saying that it was bigotry simply to believe Christian teaching. Well, you see where that goes, right? If that's the case, if it is bigotry to believe that what the church and scripture teaches about homosexuality, if just believing that that is a sin is bigotry, and we want to pass laws against bigotry and racism and all these things, you can see how laws like this, and this was under Alberta's Education Act, you can see how laws like that would get passed so that in the privacy of your own home, you would not be able to teach historic, standard, orthodox Christian doctrine.
This has been an issue for years now. I think a lot of people talk about where we're at here in the United States on the topic of same-sex marriage and personal rights and freedoms and education. And what's happening is people say the debate you Americans are having is not even allowed in Canada.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't talk about it.
We can't even talk about
these things
anymore.
Open dialogue, yes.
Which is insane, isn't it? Well, it's gotten even crazier. So that was 2012. But now, freedom of speech, press, and religion have suffered even more due to government pressure. pressure. And the latest headlines coming out of Canada are this. Canada's new law lets government take away children if parents don't accept their gender ideology. And this is in the province of Ontario, this one. The law states that government has the right to take away children from families that don't accept their kids' chosen, quote, gender identity or, quote, gender expression. It's the Supporting Children, Youth, and Families Act of 2017, also known as Bill 89. It passed in Ontario by a vote of 63-23.
This is what's ironic about this, is that even back in 2015, and this person continues to speak up, Dawn Stefanowicz continues to speak up. She herself is a child who has a father who experienced same-sex attraction and who died of AIDS. And she's saying, look, this is a warning from Canada. Same-sex marriage erodes fundamental rights.
You would think this would be obvious. You would think that everyone could see that we're entering into some sort of Orwellian totalitarian state,
right,
where if, let's say, so you're a parent, right? And your kid is a bit of a tomboy. I mean, I'm thinking, I'm looking at somebody who was a tomboy.
I was a tomboy when I was a kid. I loved dirt,
so,
bare feet.
So let's say, you know, you played in the dirt and maybe you liked wearing jeans and ripped sneakers and stuff rather than little dresses, and somebody suggested to you, because, you know, we're in modern time, that, Timory, you know, maybe we should just think of you as a boy. And you're like, oh, okay. And your parents say, Timory, listen, play in the dirt all you want, wear your ripped jeans, and you're, that's fine.
You don't have to wear dresses.
Fine, don't wear dresses, fine. But we're not treating you as a boy. What happens next now? Oh. In come the authorities
in Canada
to say, Timory, we're out. Oh my.
So now what's happening is that not only does the government know better than the parents, but now we're also seeing that the child knows better than the parents, and that the one person or people who essentially raise this child know the child best, have the most invested interest in the child, right? Are now being removed from the situation when your child actually might be struggling, possibly, from gender dysphoria.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, it's never going to be about what the child actually thinks. This is not one of those situations where we have the good of the child in mind. If you've got a minor, we're talking about elementary school kids, who thinks they're a boy, you know what, and they're a girl, they have been told that by somebody. All right, so what actually happens in this kind of situation is the power is taken away from the family, and it is placed in the school first, and then ultimately the state. That's how that works. It's not giving power to the kid. It's giving power to the state at the expense of the family. And if you look at totalitarian states, and in particular 20th century totalitarian states, probably the premier characteristic of those states is that they hate the family. Mm-hmm. You've got to tear down the family if you're going to have power as the state. And frankly, I mean, I think this is because these totalitarian states are, at their base, they are satanic movements. I mean, this is...
Well, and it's fitting that we started this show talking about children and obedience, because here's the deal. Children in the home... It's only in the home that they first learn unconditional love. And if these children don't learn unconditional love, which is now being removed from the basic family makeup based on laws such as we are seeing in Canada, these children then struggle with trusting people in the long term. They struggle with marriage over long term. They struggle in business and jobs. And they have this strong difficulty of not being able to make these familial, unconditional, loving bonds where they know I could mess up. Say I have a drug abuse. Doesn't mean that my parents are going to say, hey, come right back into our house. But they're going to, I'm going to know that they love me in spite of that.
That's a great point, Timory. In fact, I would expand it out. You look at any major social problem that we have today, whether you look at the drug issue or teenage depression and suicide or all of them. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them, right? We could run the gamut. If you took all of the people that fit into all of these social problem categories, the percentage that come from broken homes and bad family situations, it's going to be like, in the 90th percentile, right? I mean, that's the premier characteristic of all of those problems. And it's something that we refuse to look at as a culture. Like, we refuse to look at, well, let's look at your family situation. Did you have a father in the home? Did you have loving parents? Were you able to live freely and love each other? And most of the time, not. And because we're not looking at that, this is what happens. In Canada, you get the government saying, yeah, we'll just come and take your kids. And everyone's like, oh, I guess we'll shrug about that.
Well, and here's the thing that is just completely vexing to me, Don, is that they're now not only saying, we're going to take your kids because we think that your kids should transition to a sex that is not their biological sex. So they're now encouraging hormone replacement therapy, and they're also encouraging sex changes, having this, the anatomy of that child change. It doesn't change the chromosomal knowledge that we have of whether that child is male or female. But here's the deal. Back in 2002, when hormone replacement therapy was actually pretty common, it came out that these were group 1 carcinogens. These are the same exact things that people are now being encouraged to take if they believe that their gender is something different, or if women want to be on the birth control pill. They're the same exact hormones. There's not much different about them at all. They're group 1 carcinogens, progesterone and estrogen, in their synthetic forms. And what happened, though, back in 2002 is when the media talked about hormone replacement therapy and that it was a carcinogen, what we saw is that 15 out of 30 million in America taking hormone replacement therapy stopped. And by 2007, there was an 11% drop in estrogen receptive positive tumors.
Yeah. If you think these problems are going to stay in Canada and they're not going to get to the states, that's not the case. Already in America, we have had a federal district court judge dismiss a mother's lawsuit. She wanted to stop her minor child from taking hormone blockers, and she was not allowed to. So this is in Minnesota. And if you think that, well, this is for older teenagers or young adults, quick little disturbing story from The Advocate, which is, of course, the flagship gay publication. An 8-year-old drag queen is the talk of the town in Montreal. Here's the quote. A new girl in the Montreal drag scene is making the city's other queens look geriatric by comparison. That would be Lactatia, also known as Nemesis Queen Golden, an 8-year-old who started getting into drag at the ripe old age of 7. There's some child abuse happening.
I mean,
if you want to look at who's abusing children, it's the government. It's those that are not allowing the parents to step into the situation.
And these are prepubescent children who often gender dysphoria, and this isn't just Timory talking, and this whole time when we're talking about gender ideology and the impact, this is incredible research that's out there, you guys. It's not just some facts, some feelings that we're throwing out here. We're telling you because this is the reality of the body and what we know about biology and human interaction. These kids who receive hormone replacement therapy or have their genitalia changed based on how they feel, these kids then struggle years later as they go through puberty or find out later, oh, I can't have children now, or I'm having to continuously take hormone replacement therapy because my body's been all out of whack now. You know, another thing that stood out to me, Don, before we kind of close, have you heard of the movie The Imagination Game with the one guy from Sherlock?
Oh, Benedict?
Yes.
Cumberbatch, yeah.
Yes. That movie came out, and basically it tells the story about World War II. But what stood out to me in that story is in the end, they end up coming out saying, well, here's this incredible guy that helped end the war, right?
Yeah.
And I don't want to give away too much of the details if you haven't seen it. But how it ends is essentially this guy experienced same-sex attraction. He was pushed to take hormone replacement therapy, and he died as a result, is how the movie ends. I need to do more research into it, but now we're saying these 8-year-olds, we want them to have hormone replacement therapy? Really?
Craziness.
This is Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
The Catholic Church was in the New York Times recently quoting a well-known priest who suggested that pretty much everyone's lifestyle is sinful. And we won't give you all of the entire article, but suffice to say, he was suggesting that terms that we usually use, like the homosexual lifestyle or the gay lifestyle, those things are sinful. And he was countering that, in a sense, by saying, well, listen, everybody lives a sinful lifestyle to some degree or another. Your first take on that, Timmy, before I go vent.
The second I saw that, I just thought, no. Like, I read it and I thought, well, yes, we're sinful. We have sins, but our lifestyles, the way we set up our life, people who are striving to be saints, truly, to live in a state of grace and be good people, that's their lifestyle isn't sinful. They make mistakes along the way.
They sin, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack here because what he seemed to be saying, I think this was his gist, is that everybody has sins, therefore everyone's equal. And we don't need to stress about it too much. Okay. Well, okay, let's unpack that a little bit. Yes, everybody sins. No doubt. And forgiveness is available for all of those sins. Mm-hmm. No doubt. Nobody's perfect. If anyone thinks he is perfect, he's a liar. Scripture assures us of that. So we get that. Let's start there. But does it follow, like you said, Timory, that one, all sins are equal? I want
yes.
to camp on that one for a little bit.
Yes.
Does it mean that all sins are equal or that everyone is living an equally sinful life?
Well, you know what? The first thought in the second point that really made me think of this, what about those people who say are struggling with same-sex attraction, but they are living chaste lives?
Absolutely.
They're not living a homosexual lifestyle, what we call a gay lifestyle. Person isn't gay. Gay is an action. It's something you act upon. That's why I hate when people say, oh, that gay guy. No, you have no idea if he's living a chaste life or not. He's a person.
Yeah, so we should unpack the whole lifestyle
yes.
thing. Like, could you live a porn lifestyle? I suppose you could, in a sense, right? Like, there's a sense in which we don't define you by your sin, right?
Yes.
Or your actions, or even your desires, your attitude. We don't define who you are. And that's why we hesitate to say someone, well, we don't. We don't say someone is gay because it's too much identity built up with that.
Yes.
Yes, you can have same-sex attraction. That may be something that characterizes you. We get that. Okay. But it doesn't define who you are. And no sin should, in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's a good clarification off the start. Like, okay, maybe you have a problem with gossip, or maybe you have a problem with porn, or maybe you steal stuff. I don't know, whatever it is, but that doesn't define you as a person in the eyes of God. So let's start there. But then you follow that up with, okay, maybe we do all have separate sins. And this is something I used to hear quite a bit, maybe less so, maybe it's the circles I'm running with, but you Christians focus on the sex issues too much.
These
Catholics especially. I heard this even when I wasn't Catholic, but why don't you talk about things like gossip more? Mm-hmm. Right? And I think maybe that's what he's saying. Like, listen, you've got gossips out there. You've got people with same-sex attraction. It's all the same.
It's not.
Is it all the same?
There are levels of sin. It's one thing, and this is still a sin, for me to lie to you in a simple way, say about what I'm doing today, or to lie about maybe a reason I'm late to meet with someone. That's a lie. That's a sin in and of itself. It might be a small lie, but God is perfect truth, and we're speaking an untruth. And we're more open to a person when we're just honest about our faults or whatever it might be, of why we were late or whatever it might be, you know?
Yeah.
But then there's a lie of our body, say when we're engaging in homosexual acts. We're interacting on a physical level. That's a sin against the dignity of the body and the dignity of sexuality and the truth of our body that we're made male and female. And I'm sorry, but the parts only fit together that way. It's true.
True. Hey, it's true.
I always get people with that one.
So not all sins are equal. I would add this. Not everyone is enslaved to sin to the same degree, right?
Yes.
So you can gossip once in a while, or you can look at porn once in a while. Those are all bad things. Or you could be enslaved to porn in a way that it's taking up 8 hours every day. Well, yes. that's worse. Okay. Like, that actually is worse if, you are enslaved to porn where it's taking up 8 hours of your day.
You're late for everything. Yeah. You can't make eye contact. We talked about this recently on the show.
Like, it's not beyond the realm of reason to think that there are degrees of these problems and that they get worse. The yes. more you get in, I mean, what is Satan doing out there, right? And the, mm-hmm. if our goal is to be holy, if our goal is to be saints in heaven and live forever, and Satan's goal is to make us essentially nothing, and in a sense, like, he wants to take our humanity from us, make us enslaved to sin forever, there's degrees. That's a sliding scale. We're on one way, it's yeah. a process one way or the other.
And we're not saying that one person's better than another,
no,
but
not
we're
at
saying
all.
One sin is objectively worse than another.
And you can have degrees of yes. being enslaved to that sin. Now, the sexual ones, and I won't back off this one either. There's a reason in Scripture that the sexual sins are always listed first, if you look at how mm-hmm. Paul lays them out. And there's a reason that other sins generally follow from sexual sins. And we don't have to go too much into it in this one segment, but I would argue that it's because the gift of sex is so good. Like, it is such an amazing grace that God has given us.
It brings about new life.
It's the image of God to such an extent, right? Like, if you look at, well, how does God grant his image to humans? Or in what way are we in the image of God? Maybe that's another way to put it. You look at the gift of sex, male and female coming together. When in the garden, you look at the creation story, it's he made male, he made female, and together they're the image of God. Like, it's mm-hmm. that family that ultimately displays the image of God. And that is such a huge thing. I mean, it's so close. You have all of this creative ability, like you said. Like,
the union of two people.
It's the life of the Trinity displayed on earth mm-hmm. in that union to such an extent that we actually take part in God's creative acts. I mean, mm-hmm. we procreate. Craziness how big that is. To distort that, to disorder that gift, what won't you do, for one thing, right? If you do that, everything else is off the table. But it's such an amazing positive that to distort that one is a major negative.
Well, and to separate, and this is why people make such a big deal within the church about sexuality. If we cannot even know ourselves in an integrated sexuality, if someone's a priest, a consecrated religious, living a single life, if you can't know yourself in your body, if you have to be interacting physically with other people in order to feel comfortable, to feel happy, you're missing the mark. Sexuality is made for the union of two people. It's a permanent bond, and it is something we're called to be faithful to. And with that, you have the union of two people for the good of the spouses and for the procreation of children. And that bond, as it is something that helps us to transform us in understanding and being selfless. We can't have sex with multiple partners. We can't leave our family and our children. That draws us into a path that is very clear. And things like pornography pull us away from the self-understanding of our sexuality.
I love the term self-understanding. That's right. When you distort the gift of sex the way God intended it, you don't know yourself. And when you don't know yourself, you're not going to know God. I mean, those are the two things. We become completely ignorant of who we are, what our meaning in life is, and ultimately then, we don't know God. And we were made for love. Like, that's the meaning of life, to love others, to love God, to live in union with all of them. And when you distort that sexual gift, none of that is possible. And that's the huge issue, right? Like, you can gossip a little bit and still, on an essential level, know yourself and know God. It's not good. I'm not saying it's not a sin. But the sexual thing is different than some of those other sins. Yes. And that's why I had a conversation just the other day with someone that, you know, I love and respect. But they were like, you know, I just think the church might change its teaching on this whole. I'm like, it's...
Go read the catechism. The
church
can't change.
For one, it's not going to do that. But more importantly, you're missing the whole point about how beautiful and important this whole topic is. Like, why would we abandon? No, there's no way we can abandon that. Yes. That's to give up the whole ball game. Like, to give up the whole plan of God.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, I recently had an encounter with a big issue with some friends of mine who are struggling with an institution that there seems to be some sexual abuse taking place. It's not a Catholic church, just make that clear. And if either way, what's happening though is some people are saying, we need to make this public. We need to talk about what's happening. And it's so important that we do, that we're addressing when things like this happen, when we're addressing this disorder that's taking place, because again, it's harmful to who we are. And the church isn't going to change its teaching on sexuality. And some people are saying, well, because there's some confusion right now about marriage and family, I think that this is being justified by the changes some people perceive to be happening in what the church is saying about sexuality. And we have to continuously come back. The church is not changing its teaching, and it will not. One of the first commandments after those focusing on our Lord first is, thou shalt not commit adultery.
There's a reason it's one of the first ones. Absolutely. All right. Great stuff, Timory. We will be right back.
Now on DVD and digital download, a story about finding truth, meaning, and beauty in the last place they expected.
I can't become Catholic. What, am I insane? There's no way.
A film to encourage your faith and help you reach out to others.
I thought, this is just nonsense. These people are crazy. Atheism is much more rational.
Convinced, featuring over 20 of today's most interesting and articulate Catholic voices, including Jennifer Fulweiler, Scott Hahn, Abby Johnson, and Patrick Madrid. Get convinced now at convincedmovie.com.
From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Dawn and Timory, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Can you even use this headline in our politically correct culture? The feminization of everything fails our boys. Oh, wait, we can't say feminization, can we, Timory? Can we even say boys? I mean, all of that is just something we couldn't even reference. Even though I would say this headline is almost self-evidently true in our culture, that we are making boys more feminine, and it's not working out for them.
Well, and we just see the stats in terms of education. It is incredible that we're seeing such a huge shift in the number of men versus women who are seeking higher education, whether it's even just an associate's, bachelor's, master's, or doctorate. You see in the class of 2017, 37% of those obtaining their associates were male and 62% female. You then see, for example, a bachelor's, 42% male, 57% female. That's a 15% hike. And it actually increases when you enter into the master's degree with a 17% difference between the number of men versus women.
Yeah, that's a huge disparity, actually. And if it was the other way, I'm sure we would be crying a lot louder than we are as a culture. But you think about it, I think it actually kind of makes sense. Who are all the teachers in the younger grades?
Women.
They're all women. I mean, it's very seldom do you see a male teacher. Mm-hmm. You see a few more male professors, but that is rapidly decreasing. As we see, you just gave us the stats, what's going to happen in the future as all of these women pour out of graduate schools and doctorates? I mean, it's going to be all female professors, too. Well, what happens when you have an educational system that is completely run by women? You are having feminine results.
Well, and it just goes to show, just like the studies consistently show, that a child raised in an environment does best with a mother and a father, because mothers and fathers both bring different parts to the relationship, different forms of education and love that a child needs. Well, even in education, we need to be exposed to men and women. And, you know, believe it or not, on a neurological level, boys and girls interact and respond in a different way. Did you know that even in the womb, the female child in the womb This is just a funny fact, but true. Her mouth starts moving sooner than the male child. No joke.
I'm not going to make any generalizations about that, Tim.
No, it's shown, and there are all these studies showing it, and people are saying, just saying, like, there are differences between boys and girls, and there are differences in how we learn. And I think that this is what it comes down to. And when you see predominantly women are the primary people being educated, and you see boys with situations like zero tolerance policy, when boys are usually a little bit more squirmy and active. Take, for example, the Pilates class of middle school kids I was teaching yesterday.
Yeah.
Torture teaching little boys sometimes.
Of course it is. Well, you know why? Because stereotypically, but also accurately, males are more aggressive. They're bigger risk takers. And they're out there trying to do stuff that is what they consider to be courageous. And we have called that now toxic. And so a lot of the problems we have in the school, whether it's Pilates or the school system or at church when you're trying to get them to sit still for all those, but it's the same issue. You've got all these high energy boys cast into a system that says that you can't be that way. You have to sit quietly. You have to learn things in your head, not with your hands. Mm-hmm. You have to go against your very nature. And unless you can do that, this is the thing. Why is there so many women in college? Because throughout school, the rest of school, we've said that all the things that boys in general sort of like is bad. We tamp them down. And so you end up failing or doing poorly in a system that was never set up for you.
Well, even just look at all college university campuses anymore. There are women's centers and gender equity centers with initiatives dedicated solely to female success.
And then you think about, I remember the poor little boy, I made an example of him in my book. He brought a toy gun to class, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, what happened? Oh, he's expelled. He's a danger. Guess what? Toy guns are not a danger, okay? Mm-hmm. They're not a danger to anyone. They're toys. It's a piece of plastic. He didn't pull it out on some, right? But we have set up a system where to do that is considered against society. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is set up to make boys either change the way they are or to say that the way you are cannot succeed. We cannot have you being that lumberjack or whatever. I mean, and that's actually another thing. I mean, alongside of this,
it's called lumbersexual now, Don. Get the term right.
Well, but you think about all of the careers that are considered esteemed, right? Like if you want to be successful in our society, what do you have to do? Well, you have to do things that are not aggressive, where you're sitting behind a computer or you're doing white collar things. And hey, I sit behind a computer a lot, right? And that, but you know what? The things that boys generally like to do and have done in the past, like a lumberjack or whatever. No. You can't be successful and be a lumberjack.
Well, and it makes me think of one of the things they talk about in the article, and that is how, and we see this a lot of the time, how cubicle working men are criticized so heavily when they try to carve out space for hobbies that have to do with sports, F-150 trunks, buying guns and chainsaws or whatever it might be. They're looked at as ridiculous and silly playing with their toys.
I'm sure you have experience with this living out in the mountains growing up. And I have seen this a lot from the other end. So what happens in Southern California here, Timory, as you know, is on the weekends, you get a whole bunch of people in their big, huge pickup trucks and their motorcycles and their quads, and they load them up and they live down here by the beach, but they head out towards the mountains. And it's always funny.
They go to the high
desert. This big caravan of all of these huge toys, you know, all the boys with their toys heading out into nature. But you know, that's why they're tired of sitting behind the computer. I want
to
get out there and do something physical and be aggressive and risk taking and all of these things.
And there's a difference between aggression and violence, by the way.
Of course.
And I think people misunderstand that often.
Well, you think, why do boys jump off of the play structures, right? Like, you look at them and they're out there. I see this every, we've got this playhouse in our backyard and we have boys that come over and play, you know, and you know, they're constantly jumping off this. And you know what? Hey, all right.
I was a total tomboy growing up in the mountains. Second story deck, snow on the ground. My best friend was my next door neighbor, Chris. And my parents would look outside and I'd be standing on the on the balcony of the deck and jump two stories down in the snow.
I'm sure I probably shouldn't say this on the air, and I'm sure I'm the bane of many of my neighbors, but in our backyard, we have set up a Ninja Warrior course combined with our, I love Ninja, the American Ninja Warrior.
Yes.
You're familiar with this?
Yeah, they I have do a friend who things. Does all the filming for it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love it. It's fantastic. And truth be told, Jesse Graff is one of our heroes, the female who's doing all of these things. So it's not that this is a male-dominated thing. Jesse Graff is our favorite. But I have set up in our backyard a rope with all of these swinging things. And then I actually, and here's what will get me in trouble, we have had a trampoline for many years, and there's a net around the trampoline, right? So they don't fall off and hurt themselves. I took off the net, Timory, so that we could
jump off.
So that we could swing wildly off of the Ninja Warrior course and swing onto the trampoline and then bounce off of it and get onto the play
hold
structure.
Hold on a second. Hold on. Did anyone notice that he said we?
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Busted.
The problem is I can't do it as well as those little boys can do it. Those guys are amazing. We've got this little boy next door who's like a gymnast, and he can just swing wildly. He's just like this crazy.
Do a backflip in the air.
Oh, all this stuff. And you're like, wow. Anyway, all that to say, I'm out there encouraging. Listen, I don't want you to hurt yourself, but I'm not going to take every bit of risk out of your life. You're not going to be like a bubble kid, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of what we're getting at. A lot of the education that we give our young boys now is making them feel very constrained.
Yes, they feel like they're locked in cages so often. I hear this. I feel like I'm in a cage in my cubicle. I feel like I'm in a cage at work. I need to get out. I need to be free. Versus, you know, we have to learn to incorporate, you know, it's not that we're just looking forward to the weekend. Our work is part of who we are, and it's work. We bring dignity to work. The dignity of the worker is so fundamental, and I think a lot of men from education to the workforce are struggling with how they're not always set up for success anymore. And it's causing a problem even just with encouraging men to grow and become stronger mentally, physically, and emotionally.
And who is paying the price a lot of times, ironically? It's the women in their lives that often pay the price for these men not being so strong physically, emotionally, psychologically, not being able now or encouraged now to be that provider for mm-hmm. your family, or to be that person who is out there fighting dragons on behalf of the princess, right? Like no, I'll take care of that myself. Thank you very much, as the princess, right? Like no, men want to be out there. They almost need to be out there protecting you as the princess. Okay to let them do that.
I had a friend in college who was offended anytime a man would try to open the door for her, and I always thought it was so sad that she felt that she had to prove, whether it was her equality or her strength, or show that she's not fragile, when in reality it wasn't about her being weak. It was about him being a gentleman.
This is very important. I'm a guy who I want to open that door for you. I want you to walk through first. And I just want to show you how valuable you are. It's not degrading to the woman. You're trying to value the woman by serving her, by putting her first. And I think that's something that the feminist movement has really misunderstood, I think, about the male psyche. Like, we're not anti-woman when we want to open a door for you.
It's a respect, and I think that's what's at the heart of it.
This has been Trending with Dawn and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. Trending. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org. or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.